Hey there, I am so excited to let you know that my upcoming book, Building Your Money Machine, is available for pre-order. Now, you might say, why do I want a pre-order book that I'm not going to get until June 11th, 2024, when it comes out? Here's why. First off, it's going to get you access to a whole handful of wealth resources that you can't get anywhere else. They will go away. These are special resources, trainings and tools and templates that allow you to implement them into your life, to get financial freedom started in your life. The whole idea behind this book is to light the path to financial freedom so you get the chance to live a life of choice, not a life of need. To be able to choose what you do, when you want to do it, with whom you want to do it with. And yet we seem to not want to talk about financial freedom or money or wealth because we demonize it. But the fact is that it's just a tool. And if we use the tool correctly, we have a richer lifestyle, but we have a deeper impact. People's lives are better. And I want to have that conversation. And I want to have it frankly. I want to have it openly. I want to give you the step-by-step process to get yourself the financial freedom. And that's what this book does for you. It's about getting your money to work harder for you than you did for it. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to yourmoneymachinebook.com. Check out the wealth resources that you get for free, but they're going to expire. So you need to pre-order the book today, put your information in, and then we'll make sure that we get you the resources to get you on the road and on the path to financial freedom. And until I get a chance to see you on the road or see you on that path, always, always strive to live a life that outlives you. See you soon. Well, it's that time of year. Nope, not the holidays. It's not about Black Friday or Cyber Monday or any of that. It's all about taxes. I know, bah humbug. But the reality is this, the tax man is coming. If the government's trying to take 30 to 55% of every single dollar you earn, then what we need to do is know exactly how we can reduce our taxes as low as possible in the most legal way possible, so we don't give them more than our fair share. So in this episode, I'm going to walk through some of the key strategies that you need to think about before the end of the year to make that happen. Now, here's the deal. December 31st is coming, and once you cross that line, a lot of these strategies will not work, and your options go away. So let's get this in play. Let's keep more money in our pocketbook to go into the next year. This is about financial freedom. This is about protecting your wealth. This is about protecting your financial future. I'll see you in the episode, and welcome to this episode of the Affluent Entrepreneur Show. Cheers. This is the Affluent Entrepreneur Show for entrepreneurs that want to operate at a high level and achieve financial liberation. I'm your host, Mel Abraham, and I'll be sharing with you what it takes to create success beyond wealth, so you can have a richer, more fulfilling lifestyle. In this show, you'll learn how business and money intersect so you can scale your business, scale your money, and scale your life while creating a deeper impact and living with complete freedom. Because that's what it really means to be an affluent entrepreneur. All right, this is a topic about as fun as a root canal at the dentist. So I totally get it. But here's what I want you to know. I want you to look at this topic through the eyes of how we can keep more money in our own pockets. Because the more we can keep in our pockets, the more we can accelerate our path to wealth and financial freedom. And the fact of the matter is that taxes is a fact of life, whether you're an employee or a business. So the real question is, how can we legally reduce our tax bite the tax burden as much as possible so we can keep the most possible in our pocketbook, in our wallet, in our financial future. So in this episode, I'm going to walk you through some key strategies. I'll talk you through them, and some of them may apply, some of them may not apply. But the key here is this. I want you to consider each and every one of them. I want you to look at it and say, does this apply to me? Should I consider it? And then I want you to talk to your tax professional. So here's my CYA. I am not your advisor. This is about education and information. I don't know your circumstances. I don't know your tax situation. So I want you to take this information. I want you to sit with your advisor, the one that knows what you're doing and where you're at, so they can give you more specific, detailed instructions. In the meantime, let's jump in because time is running out. So these provisions are things that you can consider as we move forward, but here's the steps I want you to take. And I'm going to jump to the iPad here, and we'll start out with this, is that the first thing everyone should be doing, if you have not had a call with your CPA, with your tax professional, the person that is working on this, then you need to reach out to them. They should be calling you, but most of them don't. I want you to be proactive because, like I said, 30% to 50% bite on your income, I want to reduce that as much as possible. And so one of the first things that we need to do is this, is that every one of my clients or the people that I work with in my elite, which are my one-on-one clients, which I don't take on a lot, or even in my master's program, I tell them that it's time to review your income. See, if we don't know where your income is, if we don't know how much you've made, then we can't really project things. And too often what happens is that we wait till after the end of the year to even think about this. But when we know where we're at on income, then we have the ability to then do some planning. And so we look at the income, which also requires you to look at your expenses. Because especially when you have a business, what ends up happening is that, remember, and I did this in another episode, we'll hook it up in the show notes, but the bottom line is that if you're running a business, you have revenues that come in, you have expenses that go out, you have this net after everything's done that hopefully is positive, but that's going to generate a tax. But the more deductions we can take against it, the lower that number is, the lower our tax is. And so when we review our expenses, the question you got to ask yourself, number one, is, are there expenses in here that I might be able to accelerate? Some expenses that I might be paying in January that maybe I pay in December. You know, for instance, maybe there's affiliate commissions or a phone bill or something that I can pay a little bit in advance to be able to know that I can take the deduction today, accelerate the deduction, get my reduced taxes, and do that. Now, here's what I'm not telling you to do. I'm not telling you to go out and spend money on something you weren't going to buy otherwise, okay? Because that makes no sense. And I hear a lot of people say this, that, well, I'm just going to go buy stuff and I'll get a tax deduction. But think about it. If I'm getting a tax deduction for $100 that I spent, I'm only going to get a benefit of 30 cents on the dollar. Because let's say I'm in a 30% bracket. I spend $100. That means I pay $30 less in taxes. But I still spent the $100. And yeah, it saved me $30, so I'm still net negative $70, which is fine if you're buying something you were going to buy anyway. So let's say you want to get a new camera for work or you want to get a new computer. Maybe you buy that in December instead of buying it in January and you take the deduction. But if you don't need a new camera, if you don't need a new computer, don't go just spending money because you want the tax deduction, okay? And so I want you to look at your expenses and say, are there things in the next 2 to 3 months that I can accelerate into this month, into December, into the last quarter that allow me to take a deduction today against the income that I have? So I know my income, I look at my expenses, and I accelerate those expenses in doing that. So those are the first two things. And they're very straightforward, very simple. The other thing that you need to look at is this, because what's going to happen is that you're going to have income that comes in. You'll have expenses that go out. You'll end up with this net number that you're going to end up with taxes that you have to pay. So they're going to figure out what the taxes are, and then they're going to look at two things. Did you have any taxes withheld? In other words, if you got paid a salary, you had withholdings on that salary that you're going to, as if you, basically you paid some taxes up front, or did you make any estimates? Okay.
Because
you'll have the taxes, then you'll have the withholdings and the estimates, which offset it, which give you what your balance is that might be owed. And what we're trying to figure out is, have you paid enough in withholdings, or have you paid enough in estimates to cover the taxes that you might owe? Now, in my situation, what I'll typically do is I'll do an actual detailed tax projection, thinking about what's coming from the business, what's coming from personal, what are the tax, the stock gains and all of that stuff. So I do a tax projection, I see what I paid, and then I look at what I should be paying before the end of the year to try and reduce the taxes as much as possible. And so when we start to look at it through those eyes, then we can plan. Now, does it take effort? Absolutely it does. Is it worth it? I don't know. You tell me. If I can save 30 to 50 cents of every dollar that I can work through a plan, yeah, it's worth it. Okay? Because it's not going in the government's, you know, pockets. It's going in mine, where I know how it's going to be used and I can use it to build wealth. And so the first three steps is to just get your arms around your income, your expenses, and the taxes that you paid in. Now you can then work through some very specific strategies. So the first strategy is this, is to look at it and say, where can I potentially max my retirement account? Where can I max my retirement account? So if you have an IRA account, for instance, you can put $6,000 away. And if you're over 50, you can put $7,000 away. Can we make that contribution now? Can we make that, so just understanding that I want to max my retirement. If it's an IRA, it's 6,000, 7,000, but let's look at it this way. If it's a 401k, if you have a 401k in your business, what you have the opportunity to do this year is you have the opportunity to put $20,000, $20,500 away. $20,500 away this year. Have you maxed that out? And if not, then should you max it out? Because remember, if I'm going to put money into that 401k, I get a tax deduction for it, assuming it's not a Roth version of it. I get a tax deduction for it, and that money is sitting there for me. It's not going off to taxes somewhere down the road. Now, if you are over 50 in a 401k, you can actually put $27,000 away. So you can reduce your income by $27,000 if you're over 50 by putting that away. So I want you to look at, can I max my retirement accounts at this stage? I'm going to do one more layer on this. IRA is the lowest amount, 6,000 or 7,000. Then you have the 401k, 20,500 or 27,000, depending on age. If it is your business and you have a 401k like I do that has a profit sharing component to it, in other words, you can actually make an additional contribution, that 401k profit sharing allows you to put more than 20,000. You can actually go up to a total of $61,000 to put that away. Or if you're over 50, 67,500. The fact is that this is a large sum for you to try and shield from taxes. And what you're doing is putting it into your own retirement account so you can get access to it down the road. And in the meantime, you invest it. It grows and it continues to grow. So one of the first places I look is should we be maxing out retirement accounts? IRA, 401k, 401k profit sharing primarily. In unique situations, you can look at something called a defined benefit plan, much more complex, much more expensive to set up, but the deductions are through the roof in many cases. But it's only good in a unique set of circumstances. So I'm not going to go into it here, but know that that's available. But let's just start out with how do you max either the IRA or the 401k or the 401k and profit sharing. So that's number four, is to look at that and say, hey, what do I need to do to max that out? That leads me to number five. Number five is funding an HSA. This is a wonderful, wonderful account. Oh my gosh, this is one of the best accounts that you can get in place. This is, HSA stands for Health Savings Account. Okay, Health Savings Account. Now, it is only applicable in a very specific set of circumstances. In other words, the way that this works is that you're able to put money into this account to pay qualified medical expenses. This year, you can put in up to $3,650 for a single, or $7,300 for a family. So you could literally put $7,300 for a family away and get a tax deduction for it and not pay tax on it. Here's why this account is important. But before we get there, let's talk about when it applies. This only works if it's connected to what they call a high deductible medical plan. So you're going to have higher deductibles, lower premiums, and I can put money away in doing that. Why do I love this account? Because this account does a couple of things. I can put the $7,300 in and get a deduction for it. That's one benefit. I can now, when I pay medical bills, take those bills and reimburse myself for those bills. And when I take the money out of the account and it's for qualified medical, I don't pay any tax on it. So I take the money out completely tax-free. So I got a deduction on the way in, tax-free on the way out if it's for qualified medical. That's not the power of this account. Here's the power of this account. You put the money in and take the tax deduction. You accumulate the bills, but you don't get reimbursed. Okay? You leave the money in the HSA account and you invest it into an index fund or something like that. And you keep doing that year after year. You can invest it and it can be 10 years down the road. And you keep all the medical bills that you have in a file. Just scan them in by year. There is no limit on when you reimburse them. You don't have to reimburse them in that same year. So imagine this. Over 10 years, you put $7,000 for your family a year away, $70,000 in, and over 10 years, that grows to $200,000 because it's invested. So now I have $200,000 in an account that I put $70,000 in, and I need $10,000 out. So I go to my file, and I take $10,000 worth of medical bills, and they could be a decade old, and I reimburse myself $10,000. Now, mind you, I put 70 in, it grew to 200, I take 10 out, tax-free, I now have 190 left, but I got the money out tax-free. The beauty in this account is investing it, not using it to reimburse things real-time, but reimburse things downtime, down the road, because you can allow it to grow, and now you have another tax-free investment account working for you to build wealth in a major, major way. Now, here's the cool thing about it, is that when you get to retirement age, if you still have the money in there and you don't have the medical bills to reimburse, you can now convert it and actually use it as a retirement account and pull money out of it. Now, you'll pay tax on it, but if it's not for qualified medical, but there's no penalties. So in effect, you created another type of IRA for you that allows you to do that. But here's the way that works, is that I would say that you max out your, if you have an HSA, or it makes sense for you to have an HSA, and we'll talk about that in a second, then, and you haven't maxed it out, you might want to look at maxing it out. One, two, getting it invested, and three, just accumulating the medical bills and not reimbursing yourself so it can grow tax-free, and down the road you can get those things reimbursed, okay? When should you have an HSA? Well, primarily this is going to be in a situation where you don't expect heavy medical bills. So I don't have an HSA because of my history with cancer, and I see a lot of doctors still and everything. So the reason that we don't do it is because it's a high deductible plan, which means I'm going to be putting a lot of money out of pocket to make that work. So it doesn't really make sense. But you can go into an HSA if you're sitting back saying, I'm healthy. I don't expect any procedures. I don't have anything going on. So you do an HSA and you have that high deductible plan. Now, the other side of it is that you don't have, once you're in an HSA, it doesn't mean you're locked into it for life. So let's say that you're in an HSA for 3 years and you're maxing out. And you know, you're married and now you and your spouse are saying, let's have a baby. All right. Now you know that you're going to have a baby, which means medical expenses are going to go up. In that year, you elect out of the HSA, you get a more Cadillac plan that's going to cover the medical expenses. And you do that because the medical expenses are high. And then if the medical expenses are going to go down again, then you can then elect back in, you know, the next year or the year after or whenever. So the bottom line is that you can go in and out of the HSA, but the beautiful thing about the HSA is tax deduction on the way in, tax-free growth of the investing in it. Number three is that I can pull the money out for qualified medical expenses tax-free. And number four is that when I get to retirement age, I can use it like a regular IRA and pull it out and pay tax then and still have all that growth. So number five is to max out or fund the HSA if you have access to it, all right? Leads me to number six. Number six, bundle them donations. Charity, charity, charity. So here's the challenge is that in the current rules, they changed the tax code. They increased what they call the standard deduction. So most people aren't getting itemized deductions. They're not getting a lot of deductions. One of the deductions that they can get credit for is charitable donations to a qualified charity. But if you don't have enough in total deductions, you don't get any benefits. So one of the things that we do, let's just take this year, for example, is that at the end of the year, if I'm going to make donations to a charitable organization, a church, or a cause, I can make those donations in December and still take the deduction for the whole year. But what happens if I want to make this donations every year? Well, there's two ways to do this. One is to go ahead and make the donation for 2022 in December, and then make the donation in advance for 2023. So you're bundling 2 years worth of donations in 1 year to move the number up high enough so you actually get a deduction for it because now you may be above that threshold. So bundling deductions is a great way to increase the possibility of getting more deductions on your tax return. But it depends on your situation and the rest of the other deductions you have, like mortgage interest and real estate taxes, which are limited and everything going forward. Now, I said there was another way to do this, and this really is number seven, but it's this idea of what we call a donor-advised fund. Imagine this for a moment. You want to be charitable in nature, but you're not 100% sure when and where you're going to put the money. So you want to be charitable in nature, and you have a really big year. Let's say that you had a windfall. You won the Powerball, whatever it is. You got this money, and you go, this is a big year. But I want to be charitable in nature, but I don't really want to give it all at one time, and I'm not sure. So there's something called a donor-advised fund, and you can get these. At Schwab. I mean, there's all kinds of places where you can get them, but a donor-advised fund is where you put money into an account. Let's say you want to make a donation of $50,000. So I'm going to take $50,000, and I'm going to donate it, or I'm going to contribute it to a donor-advised fund, okay? I'm going to get a deduction for the whole $50,000 the day I put it in. That donor-advised fund, you effectively control. So it's sitting in an account, but it hasn't gone to a charity yet. It has to go to a charity, and you get a chance to now decide what charity you want it to go to over time. So now you can sit back and say, well, I'm going to put $5,000 to here today, and that leaves you with $45,000 left. And that $45,000, you can do over different years, over different time periods to different things. So the point being is this, a donor advised fund allows you to take a deduction today for a donation that you made into an account that is earmarked to go to to charities that you haven't named yet. And then over time, you can distribute that to charities to get a deduction for it. This is a wonderful tool. For instance, if you have appreciated stock, you can actually donate the stock into a donor advised fund. Let's say you have stock that you bought it for $5,000 and it's now worth $50,000. If you sold the stock for $50,000, you would have to pay tax on the gain, the difference between the $50,000 and $5,000. But if you donate it to a donor advised fund, you get a contribution deduction, a charitable deduction for the $50,000, the value of the stock. You never pay tax on the gain. And now if you sold it, are you donating it, you can sell it and then donate it out, you get the charitable donation. You never pay tax on the capital gains, and you have the ability to be charitable-minded over a period of time. So one of the things that you want to look at is if you happen to have a windfall, if you happen to have a fair amount of income and you want to be charitably inclined, but you're not sure where you want it to go, or you don't want it all to go in 1 year, look at a DAF, a donor advised fund, open it up, contribute in, take the deduction now, and then allocate and distribute it out over a period of time. Okay, that's number seven. Number eight is called lost harvesting. And this is something, unfortunately, that there's probably a lot you can do here. Okay. When we talk about lost harvesting is this. If you happen to have gains in the stock market, or you sold things for gains, like I do a fair amount of trading, I've got some gains, but I also have some losses. You know, I'm not perfect, got some losses. So with my wealth team, I told them, I want you to harvest the losses. In other words, I want them to sell it and trigger the loss, because that allows me to offset the gain. So now this gain, I don't pay tax on. Here's the challenge, because if we don't do that, then I'm going to pay tax on the gain, and then some other down the road, I might take the loss, but I don't get as much benefit of it. So one of the things to look at is, do I have losses that are sitting in my portfolio that could offset income if I sold them and took the loss? Now, there's some limitations here that I want you to think about. I'm going to jump to the iPad just so I can pencil this out for you, because I think it's important to understand the strategy more readily, because it's not about selling things for a loss that's important. So when we talk about loss harvesting, it's a couple step process to do it right. It's not just selling things for loss. So the first thing is that we can sell a stock at a loss. That's going to give us the loss. Now, this is where most people will stop, and that isn't lost harvesting. That is just loss realization. You are taking the loss and that's it. But what we need to do is, then we got cash that came in from the loss. We need to then buy something else so we're not sitting out of the market. So if I'm going to sell a stock, I'm going to buy something to replace it, buy a replacement. Now, you got to be careful here. It cannot be substantially similar to what you sold, because there's a special rule. Let's put this in red because this will destroy it. Okay. There's a special rule called the wash sale rules. And what that is that it's a rule that the IRS put in that said, we don't want people selling all their loss stuff. Say I have Facebook and I have a loss in Facebook and I sell it on December 31st. They don't want me to sell it on December 31st to take the loss on my tax return and get a benefit of it. And then on January 2nd, I buy it back. So effectively, my financial position didn't change, but I got this big loss that I got a chance to take a deduction for, and I still hold the stock. And so the wash sale rule says that you can't buy something that's substantially similar or the same within 30 days of selling for a loss. If I sell it for a gain, it doesn't matter. But if I sell it for a loss, I cannot buy substantially similar or the same thing within 30 days, or they will not allow the loss. They will not allow the loss. So what that means is that we need to find a similar replacement, but different enough that it doesn't trigger wash sale rules. Because here's what's going to happen. The tendency is I sell, so I end up with cash in my account. Well, if I then don't do step two, I don't buy, then the cash is just going to get eroded. It's just sitting there and it's going to get eroded by inflation and everything. The idea is simply to make a parallel jump. I've got a stock that I sell, and then I'm going to buy another one, and I'm still in the market waiting for the growth and participating in it. I'm not trying to time it. I'm not trying to do anything. Literally, when we do loss harvesting, we know what we're selling and we already know what our replacement is. We do them within a couple of days. We don't wait. Within a couple of days, so we stay invested and we keep on going. But loss harvesting is a wonderful way that if you have gains, if you have things that you need to or you want to try and take advantage of trying to reduce them, especially in a year when the market's down, you probably have a fair amount of losses that you could trigger, offset those gains, reduce your taxes, but then replace what you sold with something that is appropriate that doesn't trigger the wash sale rules. Okay, that leads me to number nine. Let me just get back to the slides. Is look at Roth conversions. If this happens to be a year where your income is down, you're in a lower income tax bracket, then and you have IRAs or you have regular retirement accounts, you might want to look at the possibility of converting to Roth to pull it out of the account. You'll pay tax on it, but that's why we're saying if you're in a lower tax bracket this year, for whatever reason, you can convert it to Roth, pay the tax, no penalty. But here's the beautiful thing. Then that a portion that you converted to Roth and paid the tax on will now grow completely tax-free into the future. So when you take it out, when you retire, it's 100% tax-free. So we will look at Roth conversion strategies in a year when the income is down or we're in a lower tax bracket and to see if it makes sense. Now, there's a caution here. Anytime you do a conversion, or a Roth conversion, it must stay in the account for at least 5 years. So if you're going to need the money within 5 years, you can't do this. So the only thing that you're going to convert is the amount that you are going to be able to leave in place for at least 5 years. Okay. That leads me to number 10. Number 10, this is what we need to do before the end of the year. And that is this: update your trust, update your will for any life events. I'm going to do a whole episode just on how to protect your assets and protect your wealth with trusts and wills and that kind of thing coming up. But in the meantime, one of the things that we tend to do is we create it. If we have a trust, and y'all should probably have a trust, but talk to your advisor on that. If you have a trust, we set it and we forget it. So you might have children, you might have grandchildren, you might have gone through a divorce. You know, life changes. And when life changes, the trust needs to be updated. And too often we don't update it and it's an old trust. I can't tell you how many times I've read or I've been involved or I've seen situations where person got divorced, they got remarried, they have kids from multiple marriages. And the trust that is in place is from the very first marriage. And now the old spouse, the ex-spouse, is the one that's getting the assets when they meant to bring it to the new spouse and these other children. So it's really important to at least look at it once a year. And there may be nothing to change, but at least look at it once a year to make sure that your documents for your trust and your wills are up to date based upon your current wishes, your current circumstances, your current desires, as you move forward. So these are 10 moves that I think you need to do before the end of 2023. There's plenty of other things to consider, but the bottom line is this: taxes aren't going away. Taxes likely will go up. And so it is in our best interest to be proactive. And that means that you don't need to be a tax expert to do it, but you need to be tax informed to be able to ask the questions and be proactive about it. That means you don't wait till it's tax filing time. You don't wait till the end of the year. You get in the game, and you get in the game well before the end of the year and plan for it. With my clients, we, and especially my elite, we're looking at this and saying, we've got to think about this. We're going to add a plan, and we're going to do this. We're going to do that. Because I know that for every dollar that we can legally take advantage of, we're going to save 30 to 55 cents in taxes, which leaves that money back in my pocket or their pocket to grow their wealth at a faster rate. And that's what we want. It's the very reason that when we have the insulate pillar in the affluence blueprint, the insulate pillar is, how do you protect your wealth? How do you protect your income? How do you protect your cash flow from lawsuits, but also from taxes? Taxes is one of the biggest predators in the construct of the fact that it's a high percentage. Especially if you're in a state like mine, California, one of the most expensive states in the land from a tax standpoint. So it's important for us to be proactive, which means that if you're not going to be the tax guru, which you don't need to be, you do what you do, you need to make sure that you have the right advisors. And the advisors that you need to be with need to be proactive. Most advisors, most tax preparers are preparers. They're scribes of history. They are reactive to what goes on. They're not proactive to define what you want. And so it may require you to look for better professionals if they're not proactive or they don't want to take the time to do the tax projections, to have the conversations, to deal with the strategies, to deal with the tactics, to use the code, to use the rules to your benefit. Then you probably need a different advisor. I had a conversation with a young couple that this very thing is going on with their CPA. The CPA is reluctant to do things that in their mind is aggressive, but it really isn't. The tax code defines it and says, you can do that. So why not use the rules, play by the rules, play by the legalities, but why not use them to the fullest extent to your benefit? See, we often think that taxes are something to take from us, but we can also utilize those rules to our benefit. And there is nothing illegal, immoral, unethical in doing that. And if you find that your tax preparers or your CPAs are either one, not proactive, or two, not willing to understand the rules and use them to your benefit to the greatest extent possible, you need to find another advisor. Sorry. I mean, that's as blunt as I can be. But this is your financial future. And here's the thing. If we just think about the time value of money, it's huge. It's not just the 30 cents or the 50 cents that you save on taxes this year. It's the growth of that over the years to come. If you're 20 years from retirement and I can save $10,000 in taxes by doing things, it's not just the $10,000 I saved, but how that $10,000 is going to grow into probably $40,000 or more by the time I retire. So that tax decision, even though it seems like it's $10,000 today, maybe $40,000 in your future. So this is why I think it's important. I don't expect anyone to be enamored by taxes. I don't expect anyone to be excited by taxes. I don't expect anyone to be an expert in taxes, but I certainly would encourage you to be informed about it and make sure you have the right team around you to minimize it. And your time to do that before the end of the year is running out, because on December 31st, many of these options are no longer available until next year. So if we're going to minimize our taxes, maximize the money in our pocket in 2022, get in the game, and do it before December 31st. I hope that you found some value in this. I know it's not the warmest and the funnest of topics, But when we look at it through the eyes of making sure that we're keeping the money in our pockets, in our children's pockets, in our financial freedom path, then maybe we find the value in it, the fun in it, and the joy in it. So until I see you in another episode, I hope that you always, always strive to live a life that outlives you. I'll see you soon. Cheers. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Affluent Entrepreneur Show with me, your host, Mel Abraham. If you want to achieve financial liberation to create an affluent lifestyle, join me in the Affluent Entrepreneur Facebook group now by going to melabraham.com/group, and I'll see you there.